This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All right, it's 5:05 in the evening, and our first story of the day is about open-air restaurants and no smoking zones.
Merokok merupakan satu tabiat yang buruk. Ia bukan sahaja dapat memberi kesan yang negatif kepada perokok, malahan juga kepada orang lain yang menyedut asap rokok.
Do you hear that, Lynn?
Did you know all that?
Yeah.
So, in good news, I think, for non-smokers, and really for smokers everywhere, although maybe smokers won't see the good of it so
no.
quickly.
The health but we're ministry, thinking about them.
We are.
Right.
We are always thinking about them. The health ministry will be gazetting all open-air restaurants as no-smoking zones as of December. This is part of the ministry's initiative to protect the public from the effects of cigarette smoke. That proposal came from Deputy Health Minister Dr. Lee Boon Chye at the Dewan Negara.
Memang dalam rancangan untuk meluaskan lagi kawasan larangan merokok dan saya dalam Dewan ini memohon sokongan daripada ahli-ahli yang berhormat. Khususnya, mulai bulan Disember 2018, semua restoran terbuka diisytiharkan larangan merokok terpulang kepada perbincangan seterusnya dengan stakeholders.
Right, the ministry also proposed to close the smoking room in Parliament starting this October to make the entire area a no-smoking zone, but this will only be carried out if there are no objections.
23 areas were currently designated as no-smoking zones under the Control of Tobacco Product Amendment Regulations of 2017. These include places that I'm sure I've seen people smoking at recently, entertainment centres, theatres, elevators, public toilets, air-conditioned eateries, public vehicles, airports, government premises, and any area used for the purpose of assembly.
Yeah, those who go against it can be fined 10,000 ringgit or jail not more than 2 years, right? It's quite an interesting thing. You know, when they did the smoking ban in the UK, Northern Ireland, Wales, I guess the bad side was that you realised how bad pubs and nightclubs really smelled.
Yes.
Because the smell of cigarette smoke was now gone. But I guess one of the good things and unintended consequences of that was that crime went down. Because more people were standing outside the pubs and even at the late hours of the night. So people were constantly present. And the police released a statistic saying that, actually street crime had gone down because there were always people around.
That's
quite interesting.
That's interesting and it's good news. Although one would hope that the more places are declared no smoking zones, the more people decide it's just too much trouble to smoke. So the fact that there's still enough people on the streets to deter crime,
yes,
I suppose, is not the best news ever. I'm hopeful that this will work, but I do think that Malaysians, if anything, are real experts at circumventing bans. If there's
Correct.
One thing that we as a people are just really good at, it's kind of gently ignoring rules.
Well, so I think it's enforcement, right? I mean, if you think about the building we're in now, we're in a new building over at Wisma Menara Kenti TDI, where BFM is housed now. You have to cross the street to smoke, like, essentially. Because
yes, under a bus stop.
Under a bus stop, because there's enough security guards who are constantly telling you off if you smoke within the vicinity of this building.
They're pretty strict in Wan Utama as well.
Are they?
Actually.
Oh,
yes,
good.
Yes. Because there's, you know, there are lots of open air areas that I think used to be places where smokers would go and eat and drink, etc. And now old habits die hard, but you do have security guards coming by and being pretty harsh about it.
Yeah, but all in all, we're kind of happy with this, right?
No, I'm extremely happy
Very
with
good.
It. I'm just waiting to see how imaginative people get.
Moving on to the next story. We've been covering the issue of child marriage for a few months now. Well, a few years, actually. Finally, some good news. Slango has raised its minimum age of marriage for Muslims to 18 years old.
Baru-baru ini, rakyat telah dikejutkan dengan kes yang melibatkan perkahwinan kanak-kanak Islam pada usia yang terlalu muda. Terutama kanak-kanak perempuan. Mereka memandang serius kes-kes seperti ini kerana mereka bimbang tentang risiko kemudaratan masa depan pasangan tersebut dan kesannya kepada masyarakat kelak.
That was audio taken from Kini TV of the Sultan of Selangor speaking on Monday about the recent uproar over the marriage of a 41-year-old man and an 11-year-old girl. We've all read the news on this, I think. He agreed for the Selangor state government to raise the minimum legal marriage age for girls to 18. Previous legislation had allowed girls who are at least 16 years old to wed, while the minimum age for boys has been 18.
Yeah.
That discrepancy bothers me also, actually.
Also, I don't know what the logic is there. Is there for that, right? The raise of the minimum age followed amendments to the Islamic Family Law, State of Selangor Enactment 2003, and the Sharia Court Civil Procedure, State of Selangor Enactment 2003 as well, in regards to underage marriage. The amendments were passed yesterday evening.
It is worth saying, though, that this amended law does allow for Muslims who are underage to marry, provided they fulfil certain conditions, including having the parent or guardian file an application to Sharia court. It will also require a supporting affidavit from the bride to groom or vice versa, outlining details like the reasons for marriage, health condition, and the ability to provide maintenance.
Yeah, the court will also obtain relevant health and criminal records, and for transparency, the court will summon everyone involved for an investigation, including parents, guardians, as well as the future bride and groom who are under 18.
That will work, right? I mean, it's still not ideal, but I think having some measure of flexibility is important for something that's been in place for so very long.
Correct. I think so.
Recently, The Bigger Picture's Juliet Jacobs actually tackled the issue of child marriage in relation to religion, culture, and patriarchy. Here's a guest on her panel, Sharina Sharif from Sisters in Islam, talking about the considerations in addressing child marriage in Malaysia.
So essentially, I think Malaysia is a country where there is compassion for children in difficult situations and where, you know, there is injustice in situations which are unfair for them. You know, there is this big heart. But to change the law, that was the stumbling block, as it were. And the main reason that was given to us, it was because Islam allows for child marriage. And that was, I mean, it was a difficult conversation to have because we wanted to put across a new interpretation, a new way of looking at child marriage based on the interests of the child, based on the way our society has developed. Sure. If we look at society in the days of our Prophet, peace be upon him, you know, girls did not have education. They were not allowed to own property. They were chattel. They did not have any options for their future. Their options were to be wife and mother. Mm-hmm. They had no economic independence of any sort. And the Prophet had worked within those confines that he was in his society at that time. But we are in a different society and we need to take this forward. You know, do we stay stuck with our medieval practices just because a particular interpretation says it should be done in a particular way? Mm-hmm. Or do we move forward for the betterment of our future?
All right. Selangor is the first state in the country to raise the minimum age from 16 to 18 for Muslims who want to marry.
So yay.
Hurrah.
Yes. Briefly this morning, we covered the story from The Star, which caused, I think, some outcry. Even within our team, there was a little bit of upset. According to sources who spoke to the English Daily, Malaysian athletes representing the nation at the Asian Para Games in October were not given a budget for official attire. And if that turned out to be true, it would be deeply upsetting. But it turns out not entirely true. We caught up with Youth Minister Syed Saddiq in the afternoon to get a clarification on the story.
Thank you. Thank you very much for bringing this up. Firstly, I think the report is blatantly inaccurate. Because it stated that, you know, there's different treatment between the athletes who played for the Asian Games and also we should be representing Malaysia for the Para Games in October. Because for the Asian Games, they were given the baju Melayu. That's not true. I asked MSN to check with the athletes, what do they prefer. They said they prefer wearing the stripes. First, it's more comfortable, especially in a very humid environment. So then that's why they wore the stripes. And like what was mentioned in the article by this random source is that for the Asian Games, they were given baju Melayu, but then this one, they were not given. That's untrue. I think to me, what's most important is whatever the athletes demand of, and I obviously care about their comfort. So if really the athletes demand otherwise, I'll be more than glad to entertain. But most importantly, I'd like to say that there should be no difference in treatment.
All right. Well, I think that's important clarification from our youth and sport minister.
Yeah, very much.
For a story that got quite a lot of traction on social media.
And that's understandable,
uproar.
Right? No,
yes.
I mean, you would never want to think that our para-athletes were not being given the exact same treatment because they are doing the exact same thing for our country.
And also, it's nice to know that everyone has a choice in what they want to wear.
Yes.
That too is very
for comfort,
cool.
Yes.
Exactly. Up next, we're going to be talking about Baby Shark.
We're telling you this to consider, you know, so you can consider this fair warning if you don't want to get it stuck in your head. It's coming.
The Baby Shark is coming. All right, we've got some messages. Don't go anywhere. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
Lynn and Uma with you on the Evening Edition. It's 5:17. We're taking you through some of the stories and headlines from today. Now, you're familiar with this little ditty, aren't you?
Okay, in case you've somehow managed to avoid that song all this while, you're welcome. I'm sorry. I don't really know what to say. Because Baby Shark has become quite the global phenomenon. It made its way into Britain's top 40 even. And it was actually created by Smart Study, a South Korean video and education company back in 2016.
Of course it was.
Yes, and it hasn't stopped since then. The video has been watched by over 1.65 billion viewers on YouTube. It's the 35th most popular video there as well. And it's got the kind of viral quality that puts it in the same league as South Korea's other notable music export, Psy's Gangnam Style of 2012.
If you are a parent, you are well aware of this song.
You don't have to be a parent. You just have to be in somewhere in the vicinity of a toddler. Of,
yeah, exactly. Because as I'm walking through like Mangsa Shopping Centre, I just see iPads and I can hear the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah.
Yeah, I was dancing in studio. I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Something about it.
No. Hold on, though. Baby Shark is in a little bit of hot water. Get it? Back in South Korea, since its latest version was released. Now, a local newspaper back in January picked up on this, and apparently the lyrics for the Korean version of the song are sexist.
And you know what's crazy? We would never know about this because
all we hear is
and the dance. So while the English lyrics, we didn't get past the Baby Shark bit there, but actually it goes on to list members of the Shark family. However, the Korea Herald reported that the Korean version describes Mummy Shark as pretty, Daddy Shark as strong, Grandma Shark as kind, and Grandpa Shark as cool. Man, that works in every language.
It does. It really does. But in a front page editorial, the Kyunghyang Shinmun newspaper said the lyrics reinforce sexist prejudices and gender stereotypes. Now, we're not saying it's not a good thing to be pretty, strong, kind or cool, but Daddy Shark could be pretty too.
Correct. Mommy Shark could be all sorts of things. I really wanted to talk about this, not just to kind of infect everybody with Baby Shark.
You lie.
Although a little bit. But also because I think it's an important point of discussion. You know, when we greet children, right, it's a very common thing to say, hi, hello, you look so pretty today.
You're so cute.
And then to boys, you say, wow, you can lift that.
You're so strong. Yeah.
And I've been making a really conscious effort I don't have children, but when I'm around my nieces and nephews, when I'm around the children of my friends, I make a conscious effort to kind of, it's fine to call somebody pretty or strong if it's true, you know, or even if it's not, you're just talking to a kid. But having that variety is good, right? I mean, being able to talk about other things, being able to introduce them to other sorts of topics.
Correct. And just to, I guess not to put too fine a point on it, a lot of the time, adults don't know how to talk to children. And I think that's the first thing they go to because that's all they have to say to children.
Hi, cutie. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they are intentionally reinforcing these gender stereotypes when they say it. They're just being very unimaginative.
Yeah. But a lot of fairy tales and a lot of the things that we read, I mean, there's a reason why a lot of people grow up wanting to be a princess, you know, wanting to be, I don't know why you might not think of yourself as the hero. You might think of yourself as the Princess Peach instead, you know, somewhere waiting to be rescued.
Correct. And yeah, so I'm just trying to think about how children would take to this, right? I mean, when you hear these songs reinforcing these notions, do you how long an impact does it have on your psyche? So I was thinking about the kind of fairy tales I was exposed to. And of course, both you and I, Lynn, we grew up in a time before all of this. So we were exposed to the very traditional cartoons, fairy tales, stories. And I say traditional meaning a bit old-fashioned. So Prince Charming saves the princess. You know, there wasn't a Tangled back when I was growing up.
No, there wasn't a Moana.
Right?
Yeah, and I do miss that. A while ago, BFM spoke to Sharon Bong, the Associate Professor of Gender Studies at Monash University, about the effects that princess culture and gender norms in fairy tales would have on children. She says that there is value to fairy tales, but that it's important to try and mitigate some of its harmful effects.
It's a tough one. I mean, I think there are things to enjoy about, you know, princess culture, male-female relationships, you know, the dynamics that are involved, the boys who are taught, you know, to be protectors of women. I mean, there are good messages in that as well. I think it's important to alleviate the harmful effects if, you know, parents or educators, and this could be in the form of godparents or aunts and uncles or even grandparents, to offer that alternative, you know, interpretation that starts to get a child questioning, do I relate to, you know, such a passive heroine who just waits to be rescued, and can, you know, a man be rescued by a woman? So these are all very subtle, but I think potentially could be effective ways of getting young people or young children to start rethinking gender norms, gender roles, gender values. But I mean, parents have to be, in the first instance, committed to what the logical conclusion of such questioning of gender norms and roles might be for a child. And I think not many would hazard, you know, walking down that path.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it almost feels like so much hard work.
I am curious, though. I mean, if you're a parent, whether or not you feel that desire to change and subvert some of those stories that we've often been told and that we tell our children. You know, when you read them fairy tales, when you read them folk tales, do you adapt as you go? Do you just read them as is? Or, for that matter, do you read them as is and then have conversations about them after? You know, because that's perfectly fine, too. I think it's just, we need to interrogate this idea of, yeah, the princess, fundamentally.
Correct. Also, there are a lot of works of fiction out there right now where people have done that. They've subverted those stories. There are a selection of great fairy tales, beautifully illustrated, with brown people instead of all white people. It's the same fairy tale, but it's been modified and adapted, and the setting has been changed as well. So they've like moved it to like India and countries in Africa and stuff like that, which is really, really cool.
Which is wonderful. But as you pointed out, that takes work. So
you have to go out and find them and buy them. And
yes.
Yeah.
So we'd like to hear from you. You know, do you want to put in that kind of work? Would you like to, I suppose, read fairy tales or talk to our children in ways that are a little bit more open and flexible and modern about gender? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
All right, before we go to some Jackson Brown, I need to ask producer Calvin. You know, I just need to listen to it one more time, like Calvin. You're welcome.
Oh, also to the people who have sent us messages kind of decrying Baby Shark. Sorry, but also you're welcome. I will not be sorry.
It is now safe to tune back into BFM 89.9. We've got some Jackson Brown coming your way. Doctor My Eyes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.